4 months. Four months. Where do you get the rest? Progressive News Network Extra. I'm your host, Brooke Hines. It is Thursday, November the 21st, and it's the day after the big November Democratic presidential primary debate. So that's why we're here. That's why we're here broadcasting in the middle of the week. Usually, you will find Progressive News Network on Sundays, every Sunday at 7 p.m. Progressive News Network, hosted by the amazing Rick Spezak. He's been doing this for damn close to 10 years, and he's just the best guy in the world. Tune in and listen. I do a half hour every Sunday from 7 to about 7:30 or 7:45, depending on our guests. Now, every week on Progressive News Network, we have artists and activists and people with interesting ideas to join us. We record interviews during the week. We ask people to come on live. If anyone listening has something that they would like to promote, or you know, you're working on an issue, you're an activist who's doing work that you want people to know about and you would like to share with our audience, please direct message me, DM me, if you will, on Twitter. My DMs are open. I am at Nashville Brooke on Twitter. I'm pretty easy to get a hold of. You can also, what's another good way of getting a hold of me? That's probably the best way. That is the best, most open way. I think it's important to know that the Progressive News Network, even though we hail from Florida, you know, and the Progressive News Network Extra Studios, my own studio, is located in what I like to call Swampy J's. This is a beautiful setting in a cypress swamp, which is some of the prettiest stuff that you'll find in Florida, but it is a swamp. And we love it here. So I'm in Central Florida. Rick is in South Florida, but I tell you what, we take interviews and we talk to people from all over the world, and we have regular people on from UK, from Alaska. We've had people, we have regular folks from Maine and Washington, just all over the place. So we're not just all about Florida, we're all about everywhere. And we're all about, I'm all about this political situation that we're in going into 2020. I've been saying for a while that once you hit Thanksgiving, you are in the slide to the next year. So, you know, we're all going to settle in for Thanksgiving next weekend. We're going to be with our families. Maybe we'll travel, maybe not. Maybe we'll just be cooking a whole bunch at our house. That generally marks the time of year when politicos are taking a little bit of time off. Things slow down a little bit, and now watch, just as soon as I say this, things are going to get even crazier than they are now. But what's important about this time is that this is when people are talking to their family, and this is where people are coming back together. You know, we live in our own little bubbles. I live in my own little bubble, and I can't wait for Thanksgiving to be around my in-laws and the extended family and see what they've, you know, what they're all about and what they've been thinking about for the whole year. You know, because I don't know, you know, my assumptions about people are very often wrong. I think that just happens generally with assumptions. Point being, people don't harden in their political preferences for the presidential primary. They don't harden on those preferences until after the first of the year. Now, politicos like us, we've already decided, you know, a lot of us are already volunteering and working for the campaigns that we're interested in, or being very interested observers who are participating on social media. Nobody else does that. We're the weirdos here, which is fine. Yeah, this is my lane. Weirdo is definitely my lane, and I feel comfortable in the weirdo lane. Let's see. Make sure I've got my collection of iPads in front of me that are feeding me the right information. This debate last night there was a lot of weird in this debate, talking about being in the weird lane. Oh, and also talking about being in the weird lane, I want to mention to you that I am taking calls tonight. The very cool thing about Blog Talk Radio as a platform to, you know, do this kind of work on, number one, it's audio. And I believe in audio in a way that I don't think people do anymore. I mean, like, when I settle in for the night, I settle in with YouTube. I don't settle in with SoundCloud or whatever, you know. So, you know, maybe I'm not even talking about myself, but I grew up with radio, and I grew up with this kind of magic where you can listen to something and still be doing the other things that you do, you know, whether it's it's evening time right now. You might listen to this tonight. You might listen to this later on as a podcast, but you can still cook dinner. You can still do fold the laundry or do whatever it is that you're doing. And I find that is more difficult with video. And also, you know, just honestly, I think that there's something compelling about the human voice and especially the human voice detached from or not so closely associated with what people look like. I think that we put these, we have these overlays with what people look like and how they appear on camera. And it has nothing to do with how I feel about myself on camera, as I've been doing. I've done broadcasts since I was in high school, so I'm used to being on camera. I feel that for other folks, you know. Like, for instance, one of my favorite podcasts right now is Useful Idiots, the Katie Halper and Matt Taibbi show. And you can access that podcast through YouTube or through iTunes, and I generally try to get it on iTunes, because if I check it out on YouTube, I'll just space out. I'll just watch it. I'll just like sit there and just space out, you know, and I'm not getting that much more information by watching the video, but because it's there, I will ignore the things that I should be doing for that hour, like folding my laundry or doing whatever it is, you know, around the house. That's my little preaching about the power of radio. Now go listen to your Rush records and we'll just move right along. We're here to talk about the debate. We're not here to talk about radio. So let's talk about this dang debate. It was hosted by the Washington Post and MSNBC. It was held in Atlanta, Georgia, and there wasn't an African-American moderator on that damn stage. All right. And there wasn't very much attention to issues having to do with race and it just wasn't taken seriously. So I mean, like, you know, I've got it here in my notes that, you know, let's just talk meta for a few minutes. The meta that really hit me over the head, a couple did. A number one, how can you be in Atlanta and not have an African-American moderator? How can you be in Atlanta and not center what you're doing with some very solid attention to issues of race? It just kind of blew my mind. And it just seems like, it seems to me, like, to go meta, it seems to me that MSNBC, for this reason and some others that I'm getting ready to talk about, it seems like they're just not paying attention to the presidential primary at all. They're too busy with freaking impeachment to do anything else. There is, as a matter of fact, you know, if you looked for the debate last night on MSNBC, you might have noticed that it was impeachment right up until, what was it, a half hour, maybe an hour before. It was all impeachment all the time. And people that I talked to today, I actually talked to some people today who are impeachment people. And they said to me, well, I was so tired from watching all of that impeachment that I just couldn't do the debate. And I feel like people who are engaged and mobilized with regard to the presidential primary, likewise, we don't have the energy to sit through all that impeachment nonsense. You know, I'll read the summary. I'll, you know, take the just give me the highlight reel at the end of the week, and I'll be fine, because I have a feeling that a lot of the stuff that happens on one day gets undone the next day. So we're just gonna see. And I don't have the energy for that. God bless you if you do. No mention of Bolivia. There is a right-wing coup happening in Bolivia, happened this week. Big foreign policy issue, not a single mention, not a question. Nobody touched it. Nobody touched Brazil or Lula or what's going on in Chile right now. Nothing. You know, it's as if MSNBC doesn't watch the news. Which, if you watch MSNBC, that wouldn't surprise you at all. And I got some more to say about that. I think where it really shows how out of touch MSNBC is when you watch their spin, their post-debate spin, which was bananas, just absolutely bananas. I mean, first of all, they're pushing Klobuchar and Harris like their lives depend on it. And it's kind of funny to watch and kind of sad at the same time. And the degree to which they are going to attack Tulsi is just absurd. It's just nuts. Let's drop this piece in right here. Joanne Reed last night, really soon after the debate, looking for a message someone sent me on that, but we'll just come back to that. I want to play you a little clip of Joanne Reed after the debate talking about Tulsi Gabbard. Here we go.
The challenge that Tulsi Gabbard is having is that you can feel that way about the Iraq War, as I definitely did, but also find it odd that the way she talks about regime change wars is exactly the same way that Russia talks about them.
Right.
She uses this language that feels straight out of kind of the Kremlin.
Sure.
It is odd.
Yeah.
And that she went to see Bashar al-Assad and cannot take away from her interaction with him or her observation of him that he is a criminal.
Yeah.
Who is not just hurting,
right,
random people. He's hurting his own people. people.
The fact that she couldn't call him a war criminal is stunning.
Very sad.
What he is
also a weird Kremlin-y view that she has of the world that makes her an odd fit for a party of Democrats.
Kremlin-y view. By the way, this panel discussion had Michael Moore at the very far, I guess if you were looking at the TV, okay, I've got trouble with my left and right. If you were looking at the TV and you were holding your right hand, he was on the right hand of the, I guess he was on the right hand of the television. But he was way over there by himself. And the whole time, Joanne Reed's going off on this weird, wanting to, it's this fantasy that they have that they think that just because they don't like somebody and they don't agree with their policies or the way that they, pursue their political agenda, because just because they don't agree with it, they go straight to this whole Kremlin stuff, and she's Kremlin-y, and it sounds like what she's doing comes straight out of the Kremlin. Well, I got to tell you, Joanne Reed is the same person who just like a year or so ago, it was during 2016, thought that Russia was still the Soviet Union. She was still referring to Russia as if it was, still a communist, Soviet Union. She doesn't know what the hell she's talking about. She wouldn't know what sounded like the Kremlin if it came up and shouted in her ear, and to be talking like that makes me think that what she's been doing all day is sitting on the phone with Democratic operatives telling her what they would like to hear. And, it doesn't go like this. It doesn't go ring, ring. I'm a Democratic operative. Here's what I'd like you to say. It doesn't work like that. It works like, everybody's part of a club. We're not in it. They're in it. And so when they get a call from, so-and-so and the picture of their dog comes up because they know each other so well, it's their dog or their baby or they're this or they're that, they're friends, Joanne Reed, I'm sure, thinks that the operatives that call her every day are her friends, or they're the closest thing that she's going to have to friends. And so she takes what they have to say and she just passes it on without ever thinking about it twice. It's funny. Somebody said to me today, I'm going to talk about this a little bit. Somebody said to me today that they felt like Joanne Reed was holding on to her position by the skin of her teeth at MSNBC. And their point was that they thought that MSNBC was not welcoming to African-American voices, which, they got rid of Melissa Harris Perry. They got rid of a couple of really good folks that I liked way back when in their lean forward years, and replaced them with so you've got Jonathan Capehart doing uppers on Saturday, and he's just horrendous. I'm sure Bernie folks know the history having to do with Jonathan Capehart. I'm going to do a callback to that actually as we go along, because there is a callback to that that's relevant to this debate. Jonathan Capehart's terrible. Anyway, I don't think that Joanne Reed is hanging by the skin of her teeth. I think they love Joanne Reed. But I think it's also evident when you see her in a clip like this, that she's trying awful hard, and maybe she's trying a little bit too hard. This whole panel on MSNBC, you saw Steve Schmidt and you saw Joanne Reed, and then what's his name? That guy with the square face. The last word with Lou something. The last word guy, who I associate with the West Wing, because he advised on the show or something. Then he came in later, and you know, the panel was there not so much to analyze what was said, but to prop up the people that they've already decided that they like. Lawrence O'Donnell, thank you, listener. Lawrence O'Donnell. I wanted to call him Lou Dobbs, which I don't know. You know, maybe they occupy the same part of my brain. There's a lot of stuff that occupies, that's subletting in my brain. But Lawrence O'Donnell, the guy with the really square jaw. I'll play a clip of him in a little bit. But the way that they're going after Tulsi is just freaking insane. And the other thing that's insane is if you were on Twitter and you were watching the post-debate spin, you might have seen MSNBC News tweet out that Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, let's just call him Mayor Pete, he slammed Tulsi Gabbard with a quote, actually, that it was Tulsi Gabbard's quote where she was slamming him. So MSNBC, you know, tweets out this quote, which is, quote, "What you've just pointed out is that you would lack the courage to meet with both adversaries and friends to ensure the peace and national security of our nation." This was Tulsi's response to Buttigieg, you know, trying to assault her, you know, when all else fails. And Buttigieg got put in a box last night. So, you know, towards the end of this particular exchange, Pete Buttigieg looked like he was about to lose his shit. He was not containing himself. So now we know, you know, now all of us who are observant, now we know where Pete's buttons are and how to push them, because he was just about, you know, his eyes rolling around, you know, kind of thing. Tulsi's like, you know, going after him, like, you don't have the courage to do this and that. So this is Tulsi slamming Pete Buttigieg. MSNBC tweets out, and then gets a gajillion, you know, likes and shares, tweets out this complete lie, which they've done before to Bernie Sanders, attributed one of Bernie Sanders' very best quotes in the last debate to Elizabeth Warren on healthcare. So, like, banner issues here, you know, the courage and foreign policy and using the military, that's Tulsi's banner issue. Bernie's banner issue is one of them, actually, because I believe I'm going to argue that he's got more than one, is healthcare. I think Green New Deal is knitted in with healthcare to the point where I'm not even sure we can or should separate them. I think there's intersections there. So they corrected the tweet. When MSNBC corrected the tweet, instead of, so the first one was Buttigieg slams Representative Gabbard during Democratic debate. They corrected the tweet and there was no slamming involved. The corrected tweet was just the quote. Instead of saying Tulsi slams Pete Buttigieg for being a cowardly, you know, twat or whatever, you know, it's just like, you know, here it is. This is how biased corporate news is, and I'm preaching to the choir. I know that all you guys know how biased and awful corporate media is. That's why we gather in social media spaces. That's why we do stuff like what I'm doing right now, going over the debate. It's not much better with CNN either, I'll tell you what. But let's move right along. Let me find my notes again. Okay, so the meta is MSNBC has not paid any attention to the news for quite some time because they've had this whole impeachment thing going on. And that's a shame because this whole debate, you know, a lot of people said this debate was boring. I don't know if it's up to debates to be like super exciting. You know, it kind of feels to me like when you're doing a run up to a debate and you're looking for, oh, who's going to slam who? Who's going to knock who down? To me, that feels like watching NASCAR for fiery car crashes, which don't get me wrong. That's why a lot of people watch. And, you know, the rubbernecking effect is something that, you know, we're all kind of thirsty for, you know, I mean, we just are. But debates are more than that, you know, they really are. Booker needed a breakout moment. You know, this is one of the pre-debate issues that I think we needed, that I think is totally justified. Booker is down in the polls. His fundraising is pretty dismal. He's having trouble. He's having trouble, man. And so he needed a moment in the debate that recentered him, that reframed him. And I think that he kind of sort of got that in there when, let's see, there's Klobuchar, there's this one. Okay. I think he sort of kind of got it in there on Biden with the pot thing. Now let's see if this is that clip right here.
This week I hear him literally say that I don't think we should legalize marijuana. I thought you might have been high when you said it. because marijuana in our country is already legal for privileged people.
And he went on.
I hear him literally say that I don't think we should.
Cory Booker went on to say, after marijuana is already legal for privileged people, which, by the way, I'm one of them. Hello, medical marijuana. I'm going to do a show on it soon. I think it's really important to talk about. I think it's really important for people to know about. But he is absolutely right that it's a problem, you know, where so many people are sitting in prison because of the policies that Joe Biden instituted in the 1990s with the criminal justice reform and, you know, putting zero tolerance and putting people away for possession. You know, people's lives have been absolutely wrecked for, you know, for weed, which is, you know, if you're like me, you spent probably a decade or so of your life learning all of the arguments and knowing all your way around, you know, the effects of harm of marijuana versus the effects of harm with alcohol and this, that, and the other. It's just crazy. Now, if Booker really wanted to land that punch, he could have gone a little bit harder on the criminal justice piece. Let me see if this one has
just this
that.
This weekend, Louisiana reelected a Democratic governor, John Bel Edwards.
That's not it. That's the abortion one. We'll come back around to that. Booker didn't land his punch. He looked good, man. He did look good. And I loved that moment for him. But this wasn't a knockout punch. And I don't know if this is enough for Booker to refuel his campaign. And I'm gonna roll back around to this round at the end because I think that that we saw last night a handful of the candidates giving a little bit of a swan song as their closing argument or their closing comment. And Booker was one. Now, moving on, we've got despite the fact that, that Warren got more airtime than anyone, she didn't use it very well. She was low energy. I mean, to, you know, borrow George Bush's, to borrow Donald Trump's characterization of Jeb Bush, Elizabeth Warren seemed a little, she seemed a little beaten down, I thought. You know, she had that big climb in the polls and, you know, everything was coming up roses and all. And really, all this week, the media, I've got a Google alert on Elizabeth Warren in it, and I got to tell you, I've got probably a million stories in my email box right now that are billionaires really scared of Elizabeth Warren. Her comms people did a really good job of, you know, milking the hell out of that talking point because everybody picked it up. You know, who's afraid of Elizabeth Warren? Billionaires. Oh my God. You know, you would think that with the kind of press that she had, you know, just setting the polls aside for a second, you would think that with the kind of press that she had this week, that she would be going into this debate with a little bit more verve, you know, a little bit more, you know, kind of feeling herself or whatever. And it just wasn't there. So I saw the Elizabeth Warren that I saw last night was an Elizabeth Warren who was almost apologizing for her positions, you know, and maybe, you know, I just thought of this. Maybe she spent the week talking to donors, you know, maybe she spent the week talking to donors who were like, hey man, you got to back off of this whole stuff with, you know, that people are responding to because we're not going to respond to that. Could be, you know, that could absolutely be the case. You know, I had a friend of mine this week, wonder out loud, kind of opine. And he said, Gina, what do you think is the breakdown here in terms of, ex-Obama people and ex-Clinton people? And he said, I think the ex-Obama people are now working for Biden. And I think that the ex-Hillary people are now working for Kamala. And I had not stacked that up like that. And when he said that, I was like, oh my God, I think you're right. You know? Because if you go on Twitter and you get into any of that K-Hive stuff, when I get around the K-Hive, I get that still with her vibe. And a lot of them will have like still with her in their bios and stuff. But you get a lot of that still with her vibe. You get a lot of that extreme bitterness. You get a lot of that aggro right out of the gate. When it comes to Bernie Sanders, there's a lot of like hashtag never Bernie along with hashtag K-Hive. So I think he's right. I think that Kamala people are ex-Hillary people. And I think that Biden has the old Obama coalition. And that, so something that you saw last night with Kamala Harris is twice she referred to herself as the inheritor. She said that we must, this is Kamala Harris, we must rebuild the Obama coalition. And that she was the one who was there to rebuild the Obama coalition. Which I think that this is a little bit of bait and switch. I think this is a little bit of political voodoo because, like, I'm pretty convinced that my buddy there was right, that she's already got the Hillary people on her side. And now what she's trying to do is to steal some of that sweet, sweet OFA energy over to her side. You know, so much, just so much. Let's let's make sure that we get into big, weird Biden territory. We've got to talk about big, weird Biden, because Biden was weird in a big way last night, and people just glossed over it as the way that happens when you're at Thanksgiving dinner and there's that one uncle who does the weird thing, and maybe he doesn't close his pants all the way, and you just ignore it, you know, and you kind of try to keep the children away. That's what Biden was like last night. He was just, every time you turned around, he was saying something that was bizarre. So he's talking about, at one point, he's talking about domestic violence and this, you know, the scourge of domestic violence and how you fight domestic violence and blah, 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 blah. And, he wanted us to know that he was going to punch domestic violence. Let's see if this one's up.
No man has a right to raise a hand to a woman in anger other than in self-defense, and that rarely ever occurs. And so we have to just change the culture, period, and keep punching at it and punching at it and punching at it. It will be a big – no, I really mean it. It's a gigantic issue. And we have to make it clear from the top, from the president on down, that we will not tolerate it. We will not tolerate this culture.
Mr. Vice President.
And holy cow, the shot, the camera shot there, he doesn't realize what he's saying. And they pull back and they show Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris. And Bernie Sanders is just, he's hunched over and he's looking down and he's got his lips pursed. And what's communicated in his body language is, Lord, let this be over sooner. Stop talking. And Kamala Harris is over there just trying not to laugh out loud. You can see it in her eyes. Her eyes are just, you know, bulging, and she's, you know, doing that downward smile that is like, I'm really trying not to laugh here, you know, and, you know, that's big, weird Biden number one. Big, weird Biden number two, again, involving Kamala, he, in talking about decriminalizing marijuana and expunging records or whatever, he was trying to make a point about that he has all of this support from African American community.
Just this weekend, Louisiana reelected a Democrat.
Just pulled that up again.
Or a total of 4 months. 4 months. Where do you get the rest? Where does it come from?
Two things.
Senator Sanders, respond.
Two ways. Joe, you talked about working with Republicans and getting things done. But you know what you also got done? And I say this as a good friend. You got the disastrous war in Iraq done. You got a bankruptcy bill, which is hurting middle-class families all over this country. You got trade agreements like NAFTA and DNCR.
That isn't exactly what I was looking for, but this is a really good point right here. Joe Biden keeps trying to make the case that because he has the Obama coalition, that he is the one who can go forth as an elected Democratic president and rebuild the House and rebuild the Senate so that they can pass the milquetoast policies that Joe Biden supports. Now, if you've been following along with the Obama administration, if you're aware of what went on in terms of organizing and getting people out to vote, and how well or bad the Democrats did during the Obama administration, here's what happened. We lost 1,032 seats from the time Obama was elected until the time he got out of office. from the time he got in, and I don't know what the heck happened with the OFA. I don't know what the heck happened with I was going to be the organizer in chief or whatever it was. But for whatever reason, you know, if by accident or incompetence or by design, once Obama got into office, suddenly there was no support for Democrats across the board, down ticket, local, state, Congress, Senate. They were dropping like flies. And, you know, here's my spin on it. We elected Barack Obama as the, he was supposed to be a great change agent. He was supposed to be like hope and change. And he was going to, you know, change the tenor in Washington, which I think a lot of people, myself included, interpreted as we're going to get some stuff done. We're going to, you know, do single payer, you know, yada, 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 all of the good stuff that we thought would happen if we elect a Democrat back since Bill Clinton. You know, back during Bill Clinton, we were still under the illusion that these corporate Democrats would make a deal that would allow people to see a goddamn doctor. And they just can't seem to do it. They can't seem to pull it off, you know? And so is it incompetence or is it design? I don't know. If Biden were elected, contrary to his pitch here, it would be a disaster for Democrats because he's worse at this than Obama was, you know, and you know, losing 1,032 seats in just a few years has crushed our party. It has made things in the states just almost unbearable to deal with. So he's 100% wrong on that. That's another big weird Biden moment. There's another big weird Biden moment. This one was super weird. So Andrea Mitchell tries to gotcha question Bernie Sanders on Afghanistan. So she sets up this question for Bernie Sanders, and she's like, if you're going to pull troops out of Afghanistan, are you going to negotiate with the Taliban? Words to that effect. So it's this damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of answer. You know, do you want to put an end to one of the longest wars in American history, if not the longest war in American history? And if you want to do that, are you going to negotiate with the super bad guys? Now, set aside for a moment the fact that the Taliban have, you know, hopped on one foot to the other as to whether we're their friends or their buddies or their enemies or their, you know, whatever it is. I'm not sure even where we're. I didn't realize that this week we were not on the Taliban side, to be honest. Bernie Sanders answered the question quite well. He said, this is what you do when you're a leader, when you have to do diplomacy, which echoed precisely what Tulsi Gabbard said. And then kind of out of nowhere, he draws a contrast between himself and Biden, you know, and there wasn't a reason to do this. So it was kind of nice. You actually got to see Bernie Sanders, step out for a second here. I wish I had that. I don't know if I have that clip. Guys, closing. I've got his health care. No, I don't think I have it. Sorry, guys. But here's the big weird Biden moment. So he goes after Biden and he says, the difference between the vice president and myself is that he led the war in Iraq. He led the support for the war in Iraq, and I led the opposition. And we need a foreign policy that understands who our true enemies are. And we got to stop spending all these trillions of dollars, and we got to bring these troops home. And I won't do it through a tweet at 3 a.m. And if it requires negotiating with the Taliban, I'll do it. So he called out Biden. He called him to the carpet, and he's standing right next to him. And every other time during the debate, when someone's called out on something, that person is raising their hand and going, I gotta get in there. They talked about me. And Biden was just asleep. He was just like, I don't care, whatever, you know, move on. And so the next question went to Yang about Putin. I thought that was the weirdest thing, and was one of those things that would have totally gone, you know, right over your head, because it was the absence of something that you would expect. And oh my God, my favorite big weird Biden moment was closing arguments. What do we got? We got 15 minutes. Closing statements. In the closing statements, Elizabeth Warren, so as they were going down the line, you know, they went from Warren to Biden. So she preceded, he came after. And Warren, you know, Warren does the thing that Warren does. And she talked about, you know, cleaning up corruption in Washington and making leveling the playing field so that, you know, everyone gets a fair shake and this, that, and the other. And, you know, this is boilerplate Elizabeth Warren. So Biden comes on right after her, and he assumes that Elizabeth Warren is attacking him personally for being corrupt. It was the weirdest damn thing, and I haven't seen anybody else call it out. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. He was, and I couldn't find a clip of it because no one else flagged it the way I did, and I apologize to everybody. I had to work all day. If I had been home all day today, I would have been clipping clips. That's what I would have been doing, but I had to grab the clips that were available. So why Biden takes this just weird shot at Elizabeth Warren, and he's like, I know you're not talking about me, you know, or my family, and you know, who knows, whatever. Oh, and speaking of Biden's family, weird little side story today, sidebar. He was asked by a reporter about Hunter Biden, that Joe Biden is a grandfather now with some woman out of wedlock with Hunter. And it was just like, you know, just this weird story that comes out of nowhere, and he gets asked about it. And then he punches back at the reporter, like, of course you'd be the one to ask that question, man. You know, and his comms deputy is standing next to him, and she's like, no more questions, we're leaving. And Biden's still like sniping back and forth with this other reporter. It was fucking beautiful. Big weird Biden. That is something to take away from this debate. So let's talk about Bernie. Bernie, y'all. I gotta say, in all of the run-up to this particular debate, I heard over and over again that Bernie has to X, Bernie has to Y, Bernie has to attack so-and-so, Bernie has to push over so-and-so, yada, 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 you know, all of this stuff, like, you know, setting up all of these conditions, like, if Bernie doesn't do X, Y, or C, then he won't have had a good night. Now, I think Bernie had a very good night, and I think that all of his nights have been very good nights. I'm not one of those people who thought that his last debate was like over the moon, or that this debate was over the moon. You know, like, I think that, and this is what I look for in Sanders, this is what I've come to expect, is that he does a yeoman's job. Like, he just goes out there and he does his thing. He doesn't try to tap dance on anything. If he sees the opportunity to say something funny or to, you know, snark on someone, he might take it. But he's Bernie, and he's always going to be Bernie. He had some amazing freaking moments, though. I mean, let's see. Is this the Israel one? So he brought up Israel out of nowhere, which, good for him. My clips list is right over here. Yeah, Bernie Israel is my third one. This is real quick, 15 seconds. Listen up.
But we must treat the Palestinian people as well with the respect and dignity that they deserve. What is going on in Gaza right now, where youth unemployment at 70 or 80% is unsustainable.
So he wasn't asked directly about Israel, but he put Israel, he brought it up himself, and he put that out there. You know, this from a candidate who twice this week went out of his way to mention Bolivia, you know, to talk about the coup in Bolivia and to talk about the right-wing extremists. So he tweeted twice about it, and he took a question at the California convention. He's been amazing on this Bolivia thing, and I don't know if it's because him and Evo Morales have a particularly good relationship. I know that they both visited the Pope together. That's going to be a bonding kind of thing, I would imagine. Wow. He brought up Israel out of nowhere. That is like, you know, back to the king right there. Bernie. Any more Bernie in here? Let's check out this Bernie. What is this Bernie?
One of the big differences between the vice president and myself is he supported the terrible war in Iraq, and I helped lead the opposition against it. And not only that, I voted against the very first Gulf War as well. And I think we need a foreign policy which understands who our enemies are, that we don't have to spend more money on the military than the next 10 nations combined. But to answer your question, yeah, I think it is time, after spending many trillions of dollars on these endless wars, which have resulted in war, dislocation, and mass migrations, and pain in that region, it is time to bring our troops home. But unlike Trump, I will not do it through a tweet at 3 o'clock in the morning. I will do it working with the international community, and if it's necessary to negotiate with the Taliban, of course, we will do that. But at the end of the day, we have to rethink the entire war on terror, which has caused so much pain and lost so many lives, not only for our own men and women in the armed forces, but for people in that region as well.
So, yeah, that's the piece that he did. Biden did not respond to that. That just blows my mind. He threw it down there like a pro. You know, this is about diplomacy, and Biden just didn't have a response. Bernie's closing, and I want to make sure that I get to this, because I think his closing was outstanding. And I'm just going to play it, and then I'm going to talk about why it was outstanding. Let's go.
Let me say a word about myself. Unusual as it may seem. I am the son of an immigrant, young man of 17, who came to this country without a nickel in his pocket. I have some sense of the immigrant experience. I will stand with the 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country. At the age of 21, as a member of a civil rights group at the University of Chicago, I was arrested, spent the night in jail. And I have been committed to the fight against all forms of discrimination, racial discrimination, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia, and religious bigotry. I will lead an administration that will look like America, will end the divisiveness brought by Trump and bring us together. During this campaign, I am proud to say that I have received more campaign contributions than any candidate at this point in an election in American history. Over 4 million contributions, averaging $18 a piece. If you want to be part of a movement that is not only going to beat Trump, but transform America, that doesn't have a super PAC, doesn't do fundraisers at wealthy people's home, please join us at BernieSanders.com. Thank you.
All right, guys, that was Bernie Sanders. I think for the first time in a debate, I could be wrong, but I think that was the first time that he mentioned being arrested in Chicago at one of these events. And, you know, if I've said this before on Twitter, if I were him, I would be highlighting the living hell out of his work in the housing stuff in Chicago, his organizing, his young organizing, because that is core. That is the fabric of your, that is your moral fabric. This is stuff that you're made of. That is where you come from. It tells you so much about a person. And the fact that he's the same person now, and he has the same core values, and he's fighting the same battles, because we haven't made that much progress, that tells you something about who he is. Now, he has been attacked by some very bitter people who wanted very, very bad to work on his campaign. And, you know, just don't have anything nice to say about Bernie Sanders and the way that, and the terrible way that he handled race in 2016 and this, that, and the other. And you know what? More I think about it, the more I think that's just freaking horseshit. Because what they did, and this started like 6 months ago, maybe longer, was they started going after this particular instance. They started going after, you know, don't show me that Bernie did something in the 60s that had to do with race and getting arrested and blah, blah, blah. That's irrelevant. It has to do with nothing, blah, 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 blah. Well, they went after it because it's his core. It's who he is. And, you know, this is somebody, and these are people who wanted to work for him. You know, who I believe had worked for him last time, maybe in a smaller capacity, and this time wanted, you know, a more high profile position. And, you know, they haven't achieved that. And instead, they're working for someone else, and they're taking every opportunity they can to go after Obama in these very, very nasty ways. And I have to say, ineffective ways, because I think that the way that they attacked Bernie on his strengths, on these being his strengths, I think that he took that to heart and he hasn't used it. But last night he did. And what that showed me, as they were closing out the debate, you know, while everybody else was doing something else, Bernie Sanders was building his movement. And by the way, they got, after last night's debate, they had 5 million individual contributions. They had 4 million going in. During the debate, they got another million contributions. So a fifth more just on last night. His grassroots support is unmatched. His organizing, his digital campaign, the way that they have created cellular, like cells of support, you know, that's organic, that's not ever been done. And it seems to me that it's being created without a top. It's being created without anyone saying, I run this and you're doing something wrong. So it's organic. And that's powerful. No one else did that. The people who did a swan song, I felt last night, we'll talk about this on Sunday, I guess, Steyer, Yang, Tulsi, Booker, all did a swan song in their closing arguments. Klobuchar and Harris continued to fight each other in their closing statements. Bernie went for the movement. Mayor Pete tried to get future former Republicans to vote for him in his closing statements. That's the kind of guy he is. And then Biden just assumed that he was being attacked by Elizabeth Warren. So that's what's going on here, you guys. That's what we're dealing with. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I hope to see you guys later. I didn't get a heads up on the time running out, so I hope that you're still with us. I'm going to give you some outro music here. What do we got? I feel like being someone who's cool tonight. Listen, thanks for listening. I really enjoy this. I enjoy going over the debate. And let's keep talking. Let's stick together through 2020 and win this goddamn thing.